Welcome to these Bible lessons on the Old Testament. In these lessons, we'll cover God's magnificent creation of all the world, including the creation of man, the crown of God's creation. We'll follow with the sad fall of man in paradise and the consequences this brought to the world. In the continuing lessons, we'll teach how God visits men with the revelation of His covenant of grace. When we travel together through the entire Old Testament, we see God visiting His nation of Israel with revelations of this covenant of grace, pointing constantly to the coming Messiah, the Lord Jesus Christ. We hope these lessons are a blessing to you. Thank you.
Did you have any dreams last night? Most people do. Did you have any that you can still remember clearly? Not everyone can. However, some people remember multiple dreams, some from a long time ago. Sometimes we have pleasant dreams, but there are also times when we have unpleasant dreams. There are also times when our dreams are frightening. We call these nightmares. Have you ever woken up because of a dream you had? In this lecture, we are going to look at such a dream. The person who woke up because of a troubling dream is none other than King Nebuchadnezzar. The king is in his second year of reigning by himself. It is believed that prior to the death of his father, he co-reigned with his father. So that is why chapter 2 opens with, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams. He has firmly established his throne. His enemies have all been subdued. His choice captives have been educated and trained. The king, no doubt, sleeps well at night. But this night is different. He dreams, as usual, but this night he has a dream that is no ordinary dream. He wakes up from it, and he cannot get back to sleep. We read that he is greatly agitated. He senses that the dream was significant. It must have been important. But what were the details? How did it end? It appears that he simply cannot remember. But wait, he has wise men and sorcerers. Surely they will be able to help him out. Or perhaps he does remember and simply wants an interpretation. Then the king commanded to call the magicians and the astrologers and the sorcerers and the Chaldeans for to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. The king tells them, "I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream." "Fair enough," they say. "Tell us the dream, and we will tell you what it means." Let's look at Nebuchadnezzar's response. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "The thing is gone from me. If ye will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. But if ye show the dream and the interpretation thereof, ye shall receive of me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof." This does not seem fair. Does the king really expect these wise men to both tell him the dream he had and interpret it? Will he really kill them if they are not able to do this? It certainly appears to be the case. It seems that the king is suspicious that they might simply make up an interpretation if he gives them the details. And he might also be frustrated that he cannot remember the details himself. The men say again, "Tell us the dream, and we will interpret it for you. This was not the answer the king was looking for. He becomes quite angry. He says angrily, I know of certainty that ye would gain the time because ye see the thing is gone from me. But if ye will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for ye have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me, till the time be changed. Therefore tell me the dream, and I shall know that ye can show me the interpretation thereof. He accuses them of being impostors, pretending they can interpret, making up meanings, and so on. He gives them one more chance. Tell the dream, give an interpretation, or you will be killed. The men are starting to panic. Nobody on earth can do this. They say, come on, king, be reasonable. Now the king is furious. We read, for this cause the king was angry and very furious and commanded to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. And the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. Wait a minute. Were Daniel and his friends even there? No, they were not. They probably were looked down on by the more experienced Chaldeans, who would view them as inferior. Or perhaps they weren't considered to be wise men. In any case, Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, comes to get them, to round them up with the rest of the wise men, to have them executed. Daniel, clearly surprised, asks Arioch, why is the king in such a hurry to execute the sorcerers, astrologers, the magicians, and Daniel and his friends? What have they done? Arioch explains everything, and Daniel asks the king for some time. We don't know if Daniel spoke directly to the king or through Arioch, but miraculously the king agrees. We know, ultimately, God directed the events this way. But humanly speaking, I think the king really wanted to know what this dream meant. And if all the wise men were killed, he would never know. What do Daniel and his friends do? They pray. And that is what we should do also whenever we are in difficult circumstances. We need to remember that God is our refuge and our strength. Scripture reminds us to pray without ceasing, so we should pray in good times and in bad. And so they lay their needs before the Lord. And we read that they desire mercies of the God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his friends should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. And the Lord answers their prayer. That very night, God shows Daniel in a vision not only what Nebuchadnezzar's dream was, but also what it meant. Let's read together the gratitude Daniel expresses to God for this answer to his prayer in verses 20 to 23. Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his, and he changeth the times and the season. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise, and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who hast given me wisdom and might, and hast made known unto me now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Daniel asks Arioch to be brought into the presence of the king. Arioch quickly goes to the king and tells him he has found someone, not just anyone, but one of the recent captive Hebrews who can tell the king the interpretation. Is the king suspicious? Maybe. He asks Daniel if he can tell him the dream and give him the interpretation. And essentially Daniel says, that this is not humanly possible. But, there is a God in heaven. There is a God in heaven who knows everything and can reveal secrets to whom he will. Daniel does not take credit for anything. First, he tells him the dream. He emphasizes that this secret is not revealed to him for any wisdom that he has, more than any living, but for their sakes that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that he might know the thoughts of his heart. Daniel tells him, he saw a great image, this great image whose brightness surpassed anything around him, stood before him, and its form was intimidating. This image was so large and bright, it was enough to make anyone afraid of it. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. Daniel tells the king that he continued to stare in amazement at this image until a stone was cut out without hands, presumably out of a mountain that was behind this image. The stone hits the image's feet that were of iron and clay and breaks them into pieces. Then the entire image collapses, and the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, the gold break to pieces together. The stone appears to pulverize the image, and it becomes like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away, so that the tiny pieces of dust that the statue has become cannot be found anywhere. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. I think you can picture the king's reaction. He was probably nodding his head, yep, that was the dream. Now he knows that Daniel is not making anything up and is telling the truth. He also knows that he can rely on the interpretation of the dream as well. So Daniel continues and says, "Now we will give you the interpretation, not I, but we." The we has been explained at least two different ways: God and Daniel, or Daniel and his three friends. In any case, Daniel does not pause to ask the king if this was the dream that he had or not. He immediately begins with the explanation. Daniel proceeds to tell the king that he is the head of gold. A head of gold? Is this something that Nebuchadnezzar should be proud of? Not at all, because Daniel tells him it was God who had given him the kingdom. God is the one who made him ruler. All the benefits that go along with having a kingdom, God has given them to Nebuchadnezzar. Do you have some special talent or ability? Remember that all we have is given to us by God so that we do not become proud. After the Babylonian kingdom, another kingdom shall arise. This kingdom shall not be as great, even though it will defeat the Babylonians. This brass kingdom is the Medo-Persian Empire, usually referred to as the Persians. By the 5th century BC, this was the largest empire the world had ever seen. And unlike the previous empires, the Persians were relatively merciful. They certainly dominated and controlled the territories they conquered, but they did not simply annihilate their enemies. They used them to progress their own financial and military interests. Then there is the Kingdom of Brass, which is the Grecian Empire, established by Alexander the Great. The beginning of his conquest was in 334 BC, and even though his empire completely dominated the region, it did not last very long at all. After Alexander's death in 323 BC, the empire began to deteriorate rather quickly. However, its influence on culture and language was long-lasting. The Greek language became the official language for government and literature for many of the countries within the empire. The kingdom that is strong as iron is none other than the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire started as a republic, but it became an empire shortly before the birth of Christ and lasted for just about 500 years. Some historians believe the toes and feet of clay are simply regions and/or rulers within the empire, which is probably the case. There are others who think that the feet and toes are countries that arise later that are geographically within the region of what was once the empire. Regardless of what the feet and toes specifically represent, verse 44 tells us that, "And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." And we know that within the first 3 centuries AD, Christianity had spread throughout the Roman Empire, and today it is spread over the entire earth. The stone cut out of the mountain without hands is the kingdom of Christ. Nothing can stop the building up of this kingdom. As discouraging as it may seem sometimes when we look around the world and society today, we may be sure and confident that the gates of hell shall never prevail against the church of God. And we also know that when Christ returns, he will be the judge of all nations. How does the king respond to Daniel's interpretation? He acknowledges God. He says, "Of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and a Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldst reveal this secret." The king is so pleased that he gives Daniel a prominent position, gave him many great gifts, and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon, and chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. Then Daniel asked the king about his friends, and the king set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king. We can clearly see the providence of God at work. When Daniel and his friends were taken captive, they had no idea what was going to happen to them. Yet, God gave them the faith to continue to trust in him for all of their needs and protection. May we also, by God's grace, trust in him for all of our needs, especially our salvation.